Welcome back to Shattering Miss. President Barack Hussein Obama announced yesterday that the United States is sending 300 military advisors to Iraq in addition to the 275 troops that it dispatched earlier in the week. 575 troops. I can assure you that we will have mission creep. I can assure you that those 575 troops will be inadequate to make any material difference. And therefore, what do you do next? If you start bombing, which is what IQ had suggested, if you start bombing, you're going to manufacture ISIS in numbers that would be unfathomable. Right now, the way that ISIS recruits is they do it by way of a video. And they have ISIS recruiters for virtually every country on earth. And they recruit on behalf of al-Baghdadi. He is the hero now of Sunni Islam. He's the most revered, most famous Muslim in the world. He is what Osama bin Laden dreamed of being. He is vastly more powerful, vastly more influential, vastly more revered than any other Muslim in the world. Maybe more so than any Muslim since Muhammad himself. Baghdadi is the head of ISIS. He is captured on video, and he uses then someone who speaks both Arabic and the native tongue and is familiar with every country they send the recruiting videos to. And they're played in the mosques of those countries. And you'll have the recruiter declaring the fact that the United States is the terrorist nation. And they point to all of the bombs and all of the soldiers and all of the guns that have killed so many Muslims. And they will say that we will fight the great Satan. And we will continue to terrorize the great Satan because the great Satan continues to terrorize Muslims. That the great Satan is the only thing that stands between you and us as Sunni Muslims and a worldwide caliphate. And so while their rage is, or their guns now are pointed at Shia Islam, their recruiting is all against the great Satan, the United States. They refer to the United States as either the Crusader, the great Satan, or sometimes even by name as the United States. And while Islam has always been enraged, and Muslims have always been deadly. And they were once more deadly than they are today. When in the first 100 years of the Islamic era, Islam was the single most deadly doctrine ever conceived by humankind. Muslims killed well over 300 million people. Back at a time when 300 million people was a huge percentage of the world's population. And today, most Muslims are motivated to despise the United States because the United States is seen as propping up un-Islamic governments, insufficiently Islamic governments, throughout the Muslim world. And our military presence is seen as a scourge, as a parasite in Islam. And our willingness to do things like, for example, to send advisors against ISIS, to send warplanes against ISIS, to send more military support for Iran, which is the Iraqi government, is seen as a declaration of war against Sunni Islam. And the more that Americans do it, the more victimized America is going to be. Oh, IQ is right. Because of what we have done in the past, America has done in the past, Islam now is red in tooth and claw. And it is It is a disaster that is going to engulf the world. It's not just that Syria and Iran and Iraq are about to envelop into a regional war that's going to bring in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Turkey and Lebanon and Jordan, and that Islam at large is going to be at war with itself there. And you might say, good, and I might even say, good. But that once the great jihad is complete, and the government of Syria fails, and it's going to, and understand that Yanawa's prediction about the failure of Syria was greater Syria. It's the Syria of Assyria, which means it includes everything from Iran and Iraq, parts of Pakistan, Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, all of the region, northern Saudi Arabia, all of it. This is what falls. It's what fails. They are going to engage in a regional war, a Middle Eastern war. And in the midst of that, you will have enormous amounts of petrodollars chasing extraordinarily lethal weapons that will be gleefully sold by China, Russia, France, the UK, Germany, and especially the United States. And we're going to create the weapons that end up killing millions of people. And you might say, all right, let them just kill each other, and we'll even provide the bullets and bombs for them to do so. But here's the rub, folks. It isn't going to stay contained, and that's what IQ was telling us. It's not going to be contained. And it was very clear when he was telling us about the dreadful nature of the United States and this horrible war that is existing in greater Syria, which is really the whole of the Middle East. He told us that once the governments fall, the jihadists aren't going to put down their weapons. They're not going to disgorge jihadi ideology. They're going to run rampant in Europe, South America, throughout Africa, Russia, and the United States. And they're going to perpetrate heinous acts of terrorism. They're going to be unbelievably destructive. The carnage is going to be unimaginable. And that's what's going to happen. And it is now unavoidable. Because as much as IQ would be telling us that we can bomb them into obliteration, no, we can't. And the reason we can't do so is that the largest contingency of them is in Mosul. It was a city of, 1.5 million people? And they blended into the native population. They're in Fallujah, a city of 1 million people. They're integrated within the native population. The United States and Europe are not going to obliterate 1 million people. And it wasn't. And even if you killed 1 million people by carpet bombing those cities, Fallujah and Mosul and et al., and then doing so in all of the smaller cities in the Anbar province and then throughout eastern and northern Syria. And to say that we carpet bombed every one of those cities, ISIS would still be there. And the Sunni Muslims, the Shia Muslims in Iraq would all still be there, armed to the gills, still promoted by Iran. And if we were to do that, Saudi Arabia would still have its issue with Iranian influence and would still be arming Sunnis in opposition to them. And in the process, we would have to kill 10 to 20 million people. Not going to happen. You can't kill your way to success. It's unconscionable to even think about it. And yes, I understand that if we don't bomb, they are going to be bombing in Europe and in America and South America and China and Russia. I understand that. But they are more likely to be heinous outside of their own hellholes if we engage militarily again than if we don't. And so all you're doing is exacerbating the problem if you respond militarily. There is no way to stop this, what has occurred. That's why I like to spend so much time telling people how it occurred, understanding what Islam really is, who Muhammad was, what the Quran actually says, what the Hadith reveal, why Islam is so deadly, why it is so deceitful, why it is so destructive. It's important that you understand the menace that that is ravaging the world. And it's important that you understand how the West, in misleading everyone about the nature of the religion and becoming the arms merchants in these areas and enabling and embedding it with stupid military and economic policies and energy policies, have created this wildfire and then fueled it. It's important that you understand the culpability of the West at aiding and abetting the Islamic killing machine. But then you need to face the inevitable. This isn't resolvable, not remotely. It can't be solved. It's going to come home to roost. I don't care where you are. Even if you're in faraway New Zealand or Costa Rica, or you're down there in Argentina, or you're in the hinterlands of Washington State, it's going to come to roost. What we have sown, we will reap. It cannot be stopped at this point. It will not be stopped. So all you can do is to associate blame, to explain the nature of Islam, why it enrages people to be so deadly, the nature of the rhetoric of Western governments and why they have flamed the fires of Islamic terrorism, and then protect yourself by getting to know Yahweh. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I understand that it is the tendency of people to want to respond. I understand that's our natural tendency. So because Islamic suicide bombers screaming Allahu Akbar, flying planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, did this, that America wants to respond by saying we just can't do nothing, we need to respond. And so America responded by invading Afghanistan, which had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. There wasn't a single Afghani on those airplanes. And the plan was not conceived in Afghanistan. It was conceived in the Philippines. And then we later lied and said, well, there's Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and we need to go and get them. And that was our response. Was counterproductive. We lost three times more Americans in the response than we did in the actual event. And we squandered $2 to $3 trillion in the process. And we left a military hardware now that is in the hands of ISIS. If the choice is between doing nothing and continuing to do the wrong thing, I'm going to tell you, folks, doing nothing is better than continuing to do the wrong thing. We did the wrong thing in response by invading Afghanistan and Iraq. It's just like in Vietnam. Yes, the Russians were peddling influence, as were the Chinese. And yes, we empowered the Russians and Chinese to peddle the influence because of the stupid way we prosecuted World War II and the way we engaged in World War II with the Sun Tzu philosophy of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It got us into the position where Red Chinese, Communist Chinese, and Communist Russians were peddling their influence in the world. And so we said, we have to do something. So we invaded Vietnam. That was counterproductive. We made a bad situation worse. 65,000 Americans ultimately died between the military and support personnel. And we squandered hundreds of billions of dollars, and all we did was make a bad situation worse. The response was stupid. You know, you look at World War II. You look at the Pacific Theater. You said, okay, the Japanese, they bombed Pearl Harbor. They bombed a military base. So we declared war against the Japanese, and we sacrificed hundreds of thousands of American lives. Bankrupt the country to kill many times more Japanese than they killed. And in the process, we sacrificed 1,000 lives in addition for everyone that was lost in Pearl Harbor. Now, wrong response. And it's stupid to think, I'm going to avenge the lives of 3,000 men by sacrificing 300,000. It's just, we continue to respond stupidly. We continue to make a bad situation worse. And what we're doing, what we have done in Iraq, what we are doing in Iraq, is the wrong response. It will be counterproductive, as everything that we have done up to this point has been. Sometime you need to take a step back. Take the time to understand the terrain that you find yourself in. How did the world get to this place? How did Iraq and Iran emerge as enemies of one another? Who provided the weapons? Who provided the rage? What was the catalyst? And how did that catalyst turn into a regional war? Who participated in it? What's the problem? And if you take a breath, folks, I know it takes time. I know that everybody's life is busy. People say, you know, I don't have the 50 hours necessary to read Prophet of Doom. So, you know, I just can't believe that Islam can be wholly destructive, that there have to be peaceful Muslims. You know, there's a Muslim that lives down the street, seems like a pretty normal guy. And you just continue to wallow in ignorance. I'm going to tell you, ignorance is not going to be bliss this time. This time we have lit a fire that we can't put out. And we continue to respond to it the wrong way because so many Americans, so many Europeans are ignorant about Islam, misled about Islam. So long as Islam is tolerated, so long as Americans are supplying weapons to Muslims on both sides of the conflict, this fire is going to rage ever hotter. It's going to spread ever wider. And so now is the best time to understand who you can trust and who you can't. The reason it's important that we understand the cause of the problem and what has exacerbated the problem is so that we don't continue to contribute to the escalation of the problem, and so that those listening to this program safeguard their souls, because there's nothing you can do at this point to safeguard your country. It is important to recognize that religions are abominable things, and that every religion is evil. Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Judaism, they're all corrupt, they're all menacing, they're all deadly. Every religion. But there is one religion today that is especially violent, and that's Islam. And the reason it's violent is because Allah was modeled after Satan. And Allah routinely, throughout the Quran, orders Muslims to kill for him. He orders Muslims to kill until the whole world surrenders to Islam. The only rewards in the Quran are not for doing good things, but for killing, fighting and dying to advance Islam. It is just the nature of this religion. It is especially vicious. It has always been vicious. The period that was called the Islamic Golden Age was only the Golden Age because Muslims were extraordinarily effective barbarians. And their religion was so savage that it motivated the first Muslims to pick up weapons, to pillage the world. And every community they pillaged, they enslaved the children, sold the children off as slaves, profiting by doing so, by killing the men, raping the women, which inspired more conquest for more women to rape, and they stole all their property, all their possessions. Community by community, region by region. Soon, 300 million people were dead. Soon, an entire region that had had vibrant civilizations was essentially destroyed. That's the nature of the religion. Muhammad was amongst the most vicious and perverted men to have ever lived. He was a pedophile. He was a rapist. He was a mass murderer. He was a slave trader. He was a kidnapper. He was a charlatan. And his religious text through his sunnah, which is registered in the Quran, in the hadith, which is Muhammad's words and deeds, his example, sunnah, which is what Sunni is based upon, and his Quran are declaration of war on all humankind. It's just the nature of it. You can't change it. You can't fix Islam. There is no such thing as moderate Islam or peaceful Muslims. According to the Quran, if a Muslim isn't in favor of jihad, jihadist Muslims are ordered to kill them. If a Muslim claims to be peaceful, according to Allah in the Quran, that person ceases to be a Muslim. They become an infidel, an apostate. And the jihadi Muslims are ordered to kill them so that Allah can torch their souls, actually their bodies, in hell. You can't fix that. There is no way to reform Islam. As a matter of fact, the Islamic Reformation is what's sweeping the world now. It's why Boko Haram rapes little girls. It's why ISIS exists. It's an Islamic Reformation. Reforming Islam based upon its original roots, with Muhammad being a ruthless terrorist, is a very bad idea. And that's what we've done in this world. You can't solve Islam. You can't fix it. You can't modify it. This idea in Iraq that we want to replace Maliki with a different ruler who is more inclusive is an absolute waste of time. You can depose Maliki, sure. And you can get somebody that will step up and have different rhetoric. It will make no difference whatsoever. It's going to continue to be Sunni via Shia Islam until one of the two is defeated. And it will be the Shia that are defeated. They're outnumbered 4-1. They're outgunned 10-1. The reason that Shia Islam, Iran, which is the home of Shia Islam, is so devoted to beguiling the Obama administration in Europe into allowing them to complete their nuclear ambitions, is they recognize that's the only way that they can survive. Other than that, they're doomed, and they know it. Because they're outgunned 10-1 and outmanned 4-1. That's the nature of the ISIS campaign. We outgun them. We outnumber them, we will do them in. And to a Muslim, if you are a Sunni, a Shia is a lower form of life than anyone other than a Jew. If you're a Shia, a Sunni is a lower form of life than anyone other than a Jew. And they will readily kill one another because of the difference between Sunni and Shia Islam. Now, keep in mind, there really is no difference between Sunni and Shia Islam. Really is none. The Shia have some holy sites that the Sunni don't have. They have some saints that the Sunni don't have. They have some holidays that the Sunni don't have. And the same is true for Sunnis over Shias. But the Quran is identical. The Sunnah, the Hadith, are identical. Islam only has four sources. Five, if you count the Quran, that are dated to within 200 years of Muhammad's life. All five first became compiled in writing, including the Quran, under Shia Islam, which is the minority of Islam today. It's somewhere between 15%, maximum 20% of Islam. All of those books are Shia books. The Quran itself was first committed to paper under Shia influence, as were the Sirah, the Tariq, the history and the biography, as well as the collections by Muslim and Bukhari of topical hadith. And yet they are the basis of Salaf Islam, which is associated with Sunnis, fundamentalist Islam. There's no difference in the religion. The only difference is who's in control. Is it the mullahs in Tehran? Or is it the Saud warlords in Saudi Arabia? Who is it that gets to wield the menace that is Islam? Who is more empowered than anyone else? That is really the only fight. But they will continue because of the nature of religion. Religion dumbs people down, makes them stupid, makes them irrational. And so there is nothing we can do in terms of our rhetoric that's going to change their mindset. And there's nothing we can do in terms of politics or military intervention that's going to cause them to stop hating one another. They're never going to share power. Not going to happen. Not happening in Syria, not happening in Iraq, not happening in Iran, not happening in Saudi Arabia. It's not going to happen. So since Islam is the problem, since Islam has always been and will always continue to be vicious, uncivilized, a terrorist dogma, at war with all humankind, the only thing you can do, if you're listening to this program, is to be one of those who is willing to risk their lives to tell the truth, to risk their reputation to tell the truth about Islam. The second thing you can do is that since your government, since your media, since your military, since every religion lies about the religion, stop trusting them. Stop associating with them. Don't associate with those who are lying on behalf of this religion, enabling and abetting its ability to kill. The third thing you can do is once you recognize that there is no religious institution, no political institution, no media institution worthy of your trust, is to turn to the one individual who is. Yahweh. Read his Torah. Come to know who he is. Engage based upon the terms and conditions of the covenant. That's really all you can do at this point. There is no containing the rage that is Islam. It will continue to kill. Now, I'm here to tell you that while the wildfire that is Islam that we're seeing manifest now in Iraq is unstoppable, and that it will rage out of control, and when they finally reach a conclusion between Iran, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Lebanon, Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Jordan, when they finally reach their crescendo, their conclusion, which could be 5 years from now, could be 10 years from now, could be 15 years from now. When it finally is resolved in terms of the Sunni prevailing over the Shia. Collectively, the victors, Sunni Muslims, are going to do two things. They're going to infect the rest of the world, and they will, by infecting the rest of the world with this hideous disease that is Islam, millions are going to die in countries around the world. And then by the hundreds of millions, they're going to invade Israel like a plague. And God's ultimately going to intervene, but he's not going to intervene until 2028, perhaps, 2029, 15 years from now. So over the next 15 years, it's going to be horrific. Islam is going to be vicious and deadly. It's going to be vastly worse than living through the bubonic plague in Europe. And it's going to infect the entire world. And it is now unstoppable. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Because IQ continually asked, I'm going to tell you what I would do if I were president of the United States. It is a 7-point plan. The first thing I would do is to declare Islam illegal. I would close every mosque. I would shut down every Islamic institution in the country. And I would declare Islam as a terrorist dogma and as a political institution that was incompatible, treasonous, with America. And I'd prove it. Shut every Islamic mosque, radio station, television program, academic center down. Islamic studies in universities would be illegal. Shut them all down. Second thing I would do is I would get the world's leaders together. And I'd say, effective immediately, nobody sells any Islamic country any weapons or any parts for existing weapon systems. Let them all grind to a halt. Let them run out of bullets. No more bullets, no more bombs, no more weapon systems to any Islamic country or to anyone doing business with an Islamic country. Let them run out of weapons so that if they're going to continue to kill each other, let them kill each other with sticks and stones. Next, I would convince the world, particularly Russia and China, France, Germany, and the United Kingdom, that collectively it is in our interest to secure the nuclear weapons that exist in the Islamic world. To bomb and devastate every site in Iran, where there are centrifuges, where there's atomic research, where there are atomic scientists, obliterate them. No matter the consequences and the collateral damage, obliterate them. And then go into, as a group of nations, into Pakistan and confiscate every nuclear warhead. Yeah, there would be great losses, but consider the losses if we don't, and I would do the same thing in Saudi Arabia. While Saudi Arabia does not declare that it has nuclear weapons, I don't think the Pakistanis had any chance whatsoever of funding their nuclear ambitions without Saudi money, and I think it was a quid pro quo, which is why the Sauds demanded that the United States leave Saudi Arabia as in terms of the military bases, even though we just spent $5 billion updating. So I would confiscate the nuclear weapons in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, and I would destroy all nuclear ambitions in Iran. Gone. Now, once you have Islam shut down in America, once you have no more weapons going to Team Islam or parts for those weapons, and the next thing is that you remove the nuclear weapons from their arsenal, the next thing you do is you confiscate from Islamic nations the control over oil and gas. And that's all of them. Everything from Qatar and the United Arab Emirates to Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Iran, Iraq. And the choice is that the locals can bomb their pipelines and refineries to obliteration, or those that the world's militaries can't secure, or those countries can get a reasonable amount of money to the people from the oil that is extracted, while the leaders of those countries get nothing. No more fuel for the Islamic war machine. And the fuel is then sold worldwide, and the profits are distributed to develop alternative energy sources, while every country, including the United States, becomes energy independent, which would be not difficult to do with sane energy strategies. So that way we're no longer paying for our own funeral. Simultaneously, I would begin to educate all who are willing to listen about who Muhammad was, who Allah is, what Islam represents, and why it is a scourge and has always been a deadly plague on humanity. While all of those things are transpiring and you eliminate the scourge then of Islamic terrorism, and that you cause only those Muslims away from your voice to be able to kill each other with sticks and stones, then I would tell them the truth about the Torah and Yahweh.